Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we feature an interview from our archives with native Tulsan filmmaker Jonathan Rossetti. When I spoke with him just under a year ago, his film Home James had just won the Best Oklahoma Feature from the Oklahoma City Dead Center Film Festival. He was looking for a way to find distribution for his film, which by his own admission is somewhat of a love letter to his hometown. Well, now the film does have distribution from Devolver Films and is playing in New York, Los Angeles, Portland, and right here in Tulsa at the Circle Cinema, where it's been held over for another week. Home James is the story of an aspiring photographer who moonlights as a designated driver from Tulsa bars. He meets Cooper, a hard-drinking socialite, and a romance ensues, but unfortunately career ambitions get in the way. Several Oklahomans are featured in the cast, including Sepulpa native Julie Gearhard and veteran character actor Marshall Bell, a native of Tulsa. But the biggest star is the city itself, Tulsa, beautifully photographed by cinematographer George Sue. My guest, Jonathan Rossetti, is the co-writer, director, and also portrays James in the film. He grew up here in Tulsa and is a graduate of the conservatory program at the Atlantic Acting School in New York City and the advanced program in Los Angeles. He's appeared in a variety of films, shorts, and television, including The Unit, and has appeared off-Broadway. His film, Home James, will continue to play at the Circle Cinema through May 29th, and I spoke with him back in June of 2013. Jonathan Rossetti, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
This film, Home James, seems very much a love letter to Tulsa. Now, tell us how this film came about.
It absolutely is a love letter to Tulsa. I grew up in Tulsa, and I went to an acting school in New York and L.A. In Los Angeles, I met Julie Gearhard, who happened to be from Sepulpa. We ended up talking and pitching a couple of ideas about a script, and we immediately set out to make a movie in Tulsa and about Tulsa.
And so what was the starting point?
Well, I threw out an idea about a sober driver.
I've never heard of this before. I don't even know if we have any in Tulsa, do we?
I'm not sure. I tend to thrive, I think, in college towns, right, where you have,
lots of drunk people.
A lot of drinking and small areas to cover. Essentially, he has a moped that folds up and fits in the trunk of someone's car. And so to make a living, he does that around Tulsa. And Julie had an idea about a girl who was sort of lost and drinking too much. And we put the ideas together. You know, what if that girl fell for this guy and essentially tried to be saved by him?
Now, a number of your main actors all went to the Atlantic Acting School and the Atlantic Acting Program. Did you all meet there, or was it just different times?
Yeah, we did. Both Julie and I went to their program in New York, Julie through NYU and me through the conservatory program. And then we were also both part of the inaugural Los Angeles class. And through that class, we had the pleasure of being able to study under David Mamet and Clark Gregg and William H. Macy and Felicity Huffman and just some really talented people. And one of the tenets of the Atlantic program and one of the things that they really preach is creating your own work. So as Julie and I were in L.A., trying to get the audition or trying to get the agent, it just came down to, why don't we do it ourselves? They've been telling us to do this for so long. So let's just make a movie ourselves, and let's make a story we want to tell.
And that story is about Tulsa, but it's also about this boy meets girl. And it's also, there's an interesting subset, because both of you are from here, the northeastern Oklahoma. You mm-hmm. left, and yet there's this love for the city, and there's a little unspoken sort of, subtext in the film, which is, do you, as a creative person, do you stay in a place in the Midwest where you're not going to be seen by the big creative centers on the coast and make your way, or do you leave? And in the case of the two main characters, James and Cooper, there's just these two different mindsets of young people when they grow up, say, in the Midwest. It's one is you kind of love the place, you decide to make your way, and the other is I can't get out of town fast
yeah,
enough.
Absolutely. I think a common feeling in Tulsa and anywhere in the Midwest. The movie is a love letter to my hometown and to Julie and I's shared area. And the city really does play a character in the film. It really is about it's almost, I guess, that you could say some part of James and Cooper are the same person, and it's that inner struggle of, do I go somewhere? Do I take a chance? And it's also about about two people looking for someone to save them, only, you know, it just doesn't work that way. Another person can't rescue you, and you have to find it within yourself to make your own decisions and your own choices and fight for yourself.
And that's some of the discussions of the film, is whether, you know, are you playing it safe by staying at home, or are you, you know, and the two characters have very different ideals about that. One really loves the city. He's a photographer. He loves taking pictures of the architecture. The other person just doesn't see any attraction.
Right. I think something for Cooper's character also is ultimately that she learns is that you take you with you. Just because you move to a new place and you're running from something, it doesn't mean that you've left your problems. And for James, I think he finds himself in Tulsa. It's not that he's taking himself with him, it's that he needs to find who he is.
Now, tell us about the process of writing this script. I mean, you guys are young actors and filmmakers, and mm-hmm. It's got to be tough. You're probably working multiple jobs. did the script take a long time to put together?
It did. It took about 6 years. And Julie and I actually both work at the same restaurant in L.A. We worked on the script for about 6 years, and it was our first feature film for both of us to write. It took us a while to get our legs under us and find our way. But ultimately, we worked it out in, I think, a great way, and I think you can hear both Julie and I's voice in the film. And it really was a collaborative process from moment one of, trading the script for a week or spending 3 hours nitpicking about one line, and ultimately it was just, you know, who got tired first, and they gave up.
Now, when you're doing everything yourself, you know, the thing about film is it's always a large collaborative process. There's mm-hmm. lots of people giving you direction and sort of helping mold the script, if you will. In this case, it's just you two. How did you, you know, when did you figure out that, okay, this will work, this version? I mean, other than you just, you know, your own background and experience.
Mm-hmm. Ultimately, Julie and I did co-write the script, just the two of us, but I will have to say that it would not have been possible without a whole group of people. It was absolutely a collaborative effort, from various readings of the script to Kickstarter donations to the crew that we worked with, both a few that came from L.A. and also hiring local crew in Oklahoma. It was absolutely a collaborative process. One of the things that Julie and I think, did that worked very well for us was we tried to surround ourselves with people that were really good at their jobs. And ultimately, neither Julie or I wanted to be the smartest person on set. So I felt like we would have been in trouble had we been the smartest person. So our cinematographer, George Sue, is fantastic. Our production sound designer, Kenneth Cook, was amazing. Our editor, just all along the way, we shot big and luckily got some really talented people to work on the film.
Now, you mentioned Kickstarter. You raised the money for this film through Kickstarter,
$50,000.
And I have to tell you, this does not look like a $50,000 film. And, you know, a $50,000 film isn't what it used to be. You know, I think of Robert Rodriguez as El Mariachi, and you know, that was a $50,000 film.
Right.
And this doesn't, I mean, it looks really good.
thank you very much. Our, like I said, our DP is very talented. I mean, Tulsa lends itself to having a movie made about it, so I have to give some credit to the city itself. Thank you very much. That's a huge compliment. I don't think it looks like a $50,000 movie either.
Now, raising the money through Kickstarter, I mean, did you just hit up friends? Did you hit up, how did you raise the money? I know that you can raise tremendous amounts of money on Kickstarter. I know there's been public radio projects that have raised $500,000 or more, but
mm-hmm.
but for, you know, two unknown filmmakers, $50,000, that's quite impressive.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a nerve-wracking process, I can assure you. A lot of it was friends and family. We had a few people that would stumble across the Kickstarter and donate money to us. It was a very stressful time, certainly in my house, and I would imagine in Julie's as well. Hitting refresh on the web browser to see how much, you know, the $8 more that somebody donated. We got in just under the wire. I think we got it about 3 days before the campaign finished.
I think that's when the stress would really start, because then you say, I have to make a movie.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a very short-lived burst of joy, and then my heart sort of sank with, now I have to come through. And hopefully, I really think we did in the end. So all of those people that donated to us on Kickstarter, you know, you're about to get to see the movie, and we're so proud of it, and we can't thank them enough.
Now, one of the things I want to talk about, you mentioned George Sue, your cinematographer,
mm-hmm.
and as you're showing the script around and getting people involved, you know, Tulsa is such a big part of the film because there are all these scenes of the city that become still photographs
mm-hmm.
because this is what James does when he's not taking drunk people home.
Exactly.
And you had to get George to buy into seeing Tulsa as a beautiful place. I mean, it does have beautiful shots. Was he enamored with the city? Now, he does do a lot of travel work, but there's a very artistic look to this. This is not like a travel feature or anything.
It was not hard to sell George on the beauty of Tulsa. He got it right away. George and I have known each other for a while. We worked on another feature together several years ago. And so he and I spoke the same language and had lots of meetings leading up to it. We also had the advantage with this movie of doing a mini version of the movie as our Kickstarter trailer. So George had come to Tulsa already and shot that, and I had directed that, and Julie had produced that. So everybody sort of got a dry run at it, so to speak. And so then when we got to Tulsa, we were able to shoot the feature. We were able to hit the ground running, and George and I both knew exactly what we were looking for, and there were lots of times on, you know, being on Google Maps, showing him a location and trying to sell the idea of what the shot's going to be from a computer screen.
Well, and the other thing is that you had some great weather as far as just these beautiful sunrises and sunsets. The weather was cooperating with you because you shot it in only, 17 days?
We shot in 17 days, yep. We were in a few days we had to finish in L.A. Just because we are a $50,000 movie. and putting everybody up in Tulsa and so on got to be a little bit much in terms of the budget. But we were able to, you know, get everything we needed in Tulsa.
My guest today is Jonathan Rossetti. He's a co-writer, director, and star of Home James, an independent film made by he and his colleague, Julie Gerhardt, who's also in the film as the character Sam. She's the co-writer and producer. And it is a beautifully shot film. It has a nice story. It's a quiet film, but a very, very nice independent feature. And mainly Jonathan stars in it. It's a group of unknowns, except for one character who I didn't realize was born in Tulsa, Marshall Bell. He's the best-known actor probably of the bunch, and he's an actor you won't recognize the name, but you'll recognize the face because he's probably been in 100 films as just a veteran character actor. How did you make your acquaintance with Marshall?
It was important for us to make this movie as Oklahoma as possible, and that part of that meant finding Okie actors. I mean, of course, in our position, there are no household names in our movie, so you try to attach a star or, you know, a recognizable face like a Marshall, who is so wonderful to work with. But it really was an IMDb search of who's from Oklahoma.
Well, tell us about how you did cast. You have Carrie Knoop, I think is the name.
Knoopy, yep.
Knoopy, and we'll probably be seeing her on television this next season, right?
Yeah, I hope so. She is a fantastic actress. She was such a pleasure to work with. I had actually, Julie and I didn't have anything set other than her and I's roles as we were writing. And I saw a movie called Skills Like This that Carrie did. And from the moment that was, you know, maybe a year into writing the script, from the moment I saw that movie, I had always seen Carrie as playing the character of Cooper. Some of the actors we were able to cast in Oklahoma, some of them are not professional actors, and I think do a great job. One of my cousins is in the movie. Mary Beth Babcock.
Yes, she has a nice cameo.
She does have a nice cameo. She does a fantastic job. She's so fun to work with and just such a great person. We had friends like you mentioned. A lot of the actors are our friends from Los Angeles or New York that we know and trust and admire as actors, and we just really wanted them to be a part of our project.
Now, was this your first feature film as far as, being the co-writer, director?
Absolutely. I had directed, other than the Kickstarter trailer, I directed a 2-minute short before.
What's that like?
We just sort of jumped in with, both feet.
Now, what's that like doing a feature film after, you said you tried to surround yourself with really smart people that I assume were giving you advice. And But putting together a feature in about 3 weeks, that means you got to make the trains run on time, and that's one of the big jobs of a director is get the shot and move on.
Sure. So much of that credit goes to Julie and her producing. We had a skeleton crew at best, and so everybody was wearing a lot of hats, and most of the time no one was wearing more than Julie. She kept us on schedule and made sure we got the things we needed. I quickly cut out what I called the vanity shots, because as a director and the lead actor in the film, you don't want to stand around and make everybody watch you do 12 takes of your scene. You gotta moving on was the most common phrase on set.
What, describe a vanity shot for us as far as what do you
just,
mean by that?
Just meaning multiple takes and having to hold so I could rewatch the take and, my hair didn't look good in that one. Let's do it again. So ultimately, with an indie film, it doesn't matter. You got to get the story, and that was the important part to us, was the story. So
now, one of the big sets, I assume, was Arnie's Bar seemed to play pretty large role.
Arnie's Bar did play a very large role. The shuffleboard table was too much to pass up as a director.
Uh-huh.
We were there for 4 or 5 nights. They were wonderful. Chris and Armstrong and Mike, who was often there with us, were just such a pleasure to work with and very patient, and allowed us to essentially take over their space for 4 or 5 nights, which was really nice of them. We actually had that experience all over Tulsa with all of our locations. Aperture's Photo and Natalie Green were wonderful, again, let us just take over their space, and just really wanted to be a part of the movie with us, and it was amazing.
Now, a lot of times when you're working with a business like that, you're shooting in the middle of the night after everything's closed. Was that the case here, or were you just sort of taking over the businesses?
That was definitely the case for Arnie's, and part of that was scheduling. Julie and I joke, we're not sure why we wrote a movie where there are so many sunrises, because when you write a scene with a sunrise, you actually have to get up for the sunrise. So the next feature, it'll be all high noon shots, I think.
Well, and that is some of the most beautiful photography, is that George Sue is out there catching the sunrise. And, of course, there are scenes that take place as the sunrise. The characters are watching the sunrise. And I just gather from seeing the film that there are these various places I want to capture about my hometown.
Absolutely. There are things that I remember and love about my hometown, and one of the things is the beautiful sunsets and sunrises that we have in Tulsa. I mean, in all honesty, I'm sure I've seen more sunsets than I have sunrises in Tulsa, but I would imagine that they are similar. The center of the universe, I never miss a Weber's root beer and a burger when I get back to town. I wanted to show my Tulsa, what I love of Tulsa, and all the things that I think make it beautiful.
Now, one of the things that's happened in our downtown, and of course you were filming, about a year ago, maybe?
We were September and October in Tulsa.
And people who have been away for 5 or 6 years, they come back and they go, I don't recognize the downtown, because all of a sudden there are all these people here. Was that a surprise to you?
a little bit it was. I wouldn't have wanted to make the movie, but the Woody Guthrie Museum was under construction when we were shooting, and the Philbrook Annex down there. Mm-hmm. We're both under construction, and it, even in the 6 months since we shot the movie, those things are now finished, and there's more people, and the Guthrie Green is really taking off, and it's great to see about downtown. I feel like everybody, my entire life, everybody's been talking about building up downtown Tulsa, and it seems to finally be happening, and I think it's great.
Yeah. Now, as you were showing your script to people out in L.A., did they sort of get this idea of your hometown being a character in this film?
It was a harder sell than I expected, but Erin Lapellis, who is a producer on the film, when she saw the picture lock version of the film, she called me and said, I get it. I think on the page it was a harder sell, but seeing it, it was, oh, no, I see that this is a love letter to a hometown. And we really hope, I hope everybody in Tulsa loves it and sees the movie and watches it. But everybody's from somewhere. So I think, it's relatable to anybody that is from somewhere and loves the place that they're from.
And I think especially in Los Angeles or even New York, that's very much the case. Everybody is from somewhere else, and they have those same sort of conflicted feelings that the film somewhat goes into. Although it's also sort of it's a story of class. It's a story of somebody who's really working hard just trying to make ends meet, and mm-hmm. somebody who has everything given to them, too.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Jonathan Rossetti, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Rich. I appreciate you having us on.
Native Oklahoma filmmaker Jonathan Rossetti speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. He is the co-writer, director, and star of his film Home James. I spoke with him back in June of 2013 when the film was just entering the festival circuit. It now has distribution from Devolver Films and is currently playing at the Circle Cinema through May 29th. Information on showtimes available at circlecinema.com. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Connie Cronley.
When the ball game went into extra innings, the cat and the dog and I decided to turn off the TV and go to our beds and listen to it on the radio. It has been years since I listened to a baseball game on the radio. The New Yorker editor and writer Catherine White had a farm in upstate New York, and she wrote that every October she would listen to the World Series on the radio as she polished gourds from her garden. I love that image. A baseball announcer is a special artist. He has to describe enough to make it come alive, the pitch, the swing, the action, the reaction, but not talk us into a coma. And traditionally, his vocabulary is an art unto itself, and that's the way it was that night. When one inning ended, the announcer said, "And that retires the side. Some were looking, and some were swinging." Is that not a summary of life? Some of us stand around looking, and some of us are out there swinging. I went to a craft bazaar where I was immediately attracted to a booth selling gauzy, hand-painted women's jackets. The booth was empty. I put on one of the filmy kimono jackets, and immediately other women swarmed around. One woman said, "I have been looking at those all day, just waiting for someone to put one on." We all chattered and chatted about the jackets, about how fascinating and how artistic and how fanciful and how fun. And one woman said, "I would love to have one, but I wouldn't know what to wear it with." And I said, "Wear it with anything, for a dressy occasion, or with jeans. See, that's what I have on. Get one. They're not expensive." And she looked and she looked at a jacket, and finally she said, "I just can't. My husband would think I'm crazy." And she walked away. Isn't that a sad story? One of the most important books I've read is titled, "What Do You Care What Other People Think?" It's written by one of the greatest physicists of our time, Richard Feynman. He was an intellectual with an unquenchable curiosity and an appetite for adventure. But maybe what made this book so important to me is just the title. What do you care what other people think? Not that we shouldn't live within boundaries of kindness and civility and manners set by society, but neither should we be shackled into not thinking for ourselves. We don't have to be nice all the time. We don't have to shape ourselves to please other people. And not that we shouldn't be able to wear frivolous, fanciful jackets. It's not easy to get out of our comfortable ruts, is it? I pondered for years over a line from C.S. Lewis who wrote, "It is pain that drives us out of the nursery." I think I finally got it. Many of us don't change anything when we're fat and comfortable. It's only pain, maybe loss or grief, that makes us seek change. I am intrigued by the question, what would you do if you weren't afraid? I have written that in purple sidewalk chalk on a wall in my house. I think that quote comes from the book Who Moved My Cheese? But it has grown legs of its own on the internet. It has come to challenge us to think of what we really want to do, personally and professionally, if we weren't afraid of change, money, security, other people's opinions, afraid to get out of our comfort zone. What would I do if I weren't afraid? Well, for one thing, I'd write on the walls if I want to. I would wear artistic clothes sometimes. I would be playful and fanciful and creative. I would learn new things. And then I'd push myself to take risks. I wouldn't be standing there looking at life. I'd be swinging.
Connie Cronley is a writer, essayist, and the executive director of the Iron Gate Food Kitchen in downtown Tulsa. She's a regular contributor to Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.
University of Tulsa welcomes the Greater Tulsa community to a wide array of athletic events, artistic performances, exhibitions, academic lectures, and symposia held on campus. Our public events are open to all. Requests for accommodation of disabilities may be directed to Dr. Tawny Taylor at 918-631-2315. To ensure availability of an interpreter, 5 to 7 days notice is needed. 48 hours is recommended for all other accommodations.